With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
The Wood Memorial Day Late Pick 5 edition of the Notorious OTB on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Cut. Cut is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's U.S.-based and available in 40 states. Head to Cut.com, that's K-U-T-T-E.com, and use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. We're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Play their fantasy pick'em for a chance to win 100 times in NBA, MLB, NHL, college basketball, and more. Sign up today using promo code SGPN to get a 100% deposit match. Welcome, everybody, to the Notorious OTB, brought to you by the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. And folks, as always,
it's all good, baby, baby. It was all a dream.
We used to read Blood Horse Magazine. I got my Cuban links on.
Yes, Cuban B.
And I'm your host, Chase Sessoms, the Wolf of Oaklawn.
I'd rather be trapped than lazy. Don't care what they say, I'ma do what pays me.
Every year about this time, weaklings act like they lost their mind. Alphas reclaim the neighborhood, rob the sheep and all the wolves. Hey,
yes, yes, yes. Welcome to the show. I'm just not even going to waste time getting into this. There are a few people out in the world who can go by one name and one name solely, and they're known universally for who they are. We're talking Pele. We're talking Elvis. I feel like I got the third man in the trifecta from that joining me today. Ladies and gentlemen, Sarge, Nick Hines himself is joining me. Welcome to the show.
Dan Hutt, it is a pleasure and an honor to be here, my friend. And, you know, again, I know that, you know, we've met. I think more importantly, I've admired your show, your podcast, and your handicapping and your passion for the game. It's a pleasure to be here on this Friday. It's an exciting time indeed, with all the Derby hoopla going on, and with the Wooded Memorial tomorrow at Aqueduct. Looking forward to a great race. Thankfully, no rain in the forecast. Just going to get some cloudiness, I guess. But with that earthquake that took place in New York today, let's hope that everybody stays grounded.
Yeah, someone mentioned it in this group chat that I'm in. Someone just said quake, and I was like, okay, that's a weird non sequitur to put in. I have no idea what you're talking about. And then I realized it was the earthquake at Aqueduct. And yeah, hopefully we get sunshine and no aftershock or anything. I live in Arkansas. I don't even know how earthquakes work. It's just a mystery to me.
Yeah, well, you got tornado country out there, and we've got earthquakes out here. But you know, you kind of expect it, and when they shake in the middle of the night, you know, you kind of just roll over and let it be. I mean, look, we have no control. Mother Nature is going to do what she wants, and you just have to kind of roll with the punches. But nevertheless, you know, with Keeneland opening day today, did not let people down in regards to the payouts. I thought they were pretty outstanding, which is to be expected. I think that normally, you know, when you come out of a Turfway meeting, like we do in springtime, you know, the bettors have that kind of that knack to kind of rely on the recent form, but recent form is coming off the synthetic track. So there's where your value comes into play, and they certainly gave it out today.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the folks at home, they know that for me, when it comes to betting horses fresh off the synthetic, that is a dirty little pig boy angle.
Little pig boy.
Can I get the?
So a lot of people know you, of course, from TVG, FanDuel TV. Right. But a lot of people don't know that you're also a bloodstock agent. How long have you been working with in the bloodstock game?
Pretty much since I left training back in 2007. And, you know, it was at that time, you know, I've had a long time friend that some love, some hate, some probably don't care. But I've known Eric Gio a very long time, and opportunity presented itself. This was back around that time in 2007. And, you know, at that moment in time in our lives with my wife and myself, we were, you know, wanting to start a family. And the training gig was working out. In fact, at the time, the barn was actually probably at its apex as far as numbers. I think I had about 38 horses in training, which is a lot, you know, for California standards, considering the competition out here, because you well know, I mean, taking it back to the 80s, the 70s, the 80s and 90s, California is a very difficult place to win races. So,
yeah,
so my career evolved out of training, where I became a racing advisor or a kind of a stable manager for, you know, Southern Equine, which we had an incredible run for probably about 2 or 3 years, you know, when multiple grade ones, I think we may have had a total of 6 grade one wins in throughout 2011. So it was about that time they left California and they'd asked, you know, if I would go to Louisiana or, you know, think about moving to Kentucky. And at that point in time, our son was born in 2010. And, you know, my wife's family was here and I had the job with TVG. So it just made sense to say. So it happened about that time where I kind of jumped into the bloodstock business, if you will, as far as pinhooking, buying and selling, which I've been very fortunate at all levels, but also buying to race, you know, representing clients, go to 2-year-old and training sales and yearlings and whatnot. But I take a lot of pride in the pinhook, you know, market. And I think that there's plenty of opportunities out there.
I would be the worst bloodstock agent because I think I would solely think about just the names that I could produce off of the offspring, what I can come up with off of that. I feel like that might not be the most, you know, winning strategy.
It's okay though. You look, it's fun. Well, in this day and age, who knows? You know, this game has taken on a whole different face, right? With the new world of HISA and regulatory committees and such, it's definitely changed the whole narrative and what the game is. In many ways, in a positive sense, but there are other ways not so much. Because I think as a kind of a former trainer, your mentality is this is your business and you're a caretaker of those horses. And clearly the horse comes first in every facet of the degree. But it's unfortunate that, like anything, you could probably attest, I'm sure you've got friends like this and I talk to my 14-year-old all the time about, hey, you're only as strong as your weakest friend, quote unquote. So in other words, in racing, you're only as strong as your weakest link. So I think you can look around the country and you can just easily just pigeonhole a certain track and say, no good, no good, no good. And there are those tracks that for us, you trying to provide a fun product and, you know, hoping for a lucrative day at the track. For me, trying to essentially put out, you know, opportunities for potential clients and for the better, you know, on FanDuel TV. And, you know, we get a lot of criticisms on FanDuel TV as well as hosts, analysts, and, you know, how to build a ticket, how not to build a ticket. Do we really care? Do we bet with our own money? But, you know, for me, at the end of the day, I just try to be the most approachable guy. You know, we kind of talked about your audience, and I love the fact you've got an eclectic audience, but for the most part, is positive. The hardest part and the hardest aspect of this game right now is the kind of the darkness of going into the woods. And when you go into the woods, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of scary individuals out there. So I just try to stay to the light. You know, clearly, you know, I share scripture, you know, as part of several life happenings that I've had, whether it was with my own health, you know, dating back some 8 years ago, my wife who was diagnosed with breast cancer during pandemic year. So there's a lot that has happened over the years, but I'm very blessed and fortunate too. But in the light of horse racing, I think we have to keep it real, but at the same time, we have to try and stay optimistic for keeping ourselves in place and on pace to a better tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm with you. I feel the pastor vibes. I can definitely feel them. There we go. All right. Real quick, of course, you're listening to the Notorious OTB on SGPN, but SGPN is home to 20-plus gambling podcasts, all completely free. This week's feature shows the MLB Gambling Podcast. Baseball is back, and so is the MLB crew with their free Daily Picks podcast. If you're already subscribed to the MLB Gambling Podcast, what are you waiting for? Well, I got Mr. Nick Hines here joining me for one important reason, and that's to tackle this late pick five on the Aqueduct card. That's right, the Aqueduct Wood Memorial Day late pick five, Saturday, April 6th, the year of our Lord, 2024. And it starts race seven, post time for the sequence, 2:26 Eastern, 1:26 at the Central God's Time, as we like to call it, and 11:26 out on the Pacific Coast, because Pacific and judicial are the two hardest words to say in the English language, I've decided. Let's go ahead and jump off. Race seven, 8 furlongs, $82,000, non-winners of one something. I'm not here to read people's conditions. Allowance race. This pace looks like it could get pretty quick here. And I think that the race is more apt to fall to one of these horses that can run a stalking trip off the early speed. And I'm looking at one that could also make that middle move to try to take over at the top of the stretch. What were some of your thoughts on this race?
I feel the same in a sense that it looks as if there's a fair amount of pace. And, you know, I think Vespucci is going to take a fair amount of money just based on the fact that this horse came up a nostril short under the same condition last out. Tend to tread lightly with these types of horses, you know, because of the fact that they put in such a hard effort. The question is, you know, have you had enough recovery time? I think when you look at it, you know, he comes back within a month. You know, I'm not saying that you would leave this horse out, but I think the other point is that he comes off of a race in which he ran a new top. When they run a new top and they come back within 4 weeks' time, you know, my biggest fear is this horse could very well bounce, not to mention the point that there's other pace signed on. So I have my reservations, but at the same time, this is a horse that I don't feel as if you can totally throw out. In regards to the horse I like, it's a first-time Lasix user in the 7, Ben Duke. And Ben Duke, on the contrary, this horse raced back in November. It had been racing over at Maidan, shipped in for Hall of Fame trainer, trainer of the year last year in Bill Mott. Now you get the time. I think the point that the blinkers go on, which I'm a little leery of. Mott's got a couple of horses with blinkers on, including the Wood Memorial. But for this particular race, I don't believe it's going to make this horse too keen, because you look back at the equipment when this horse raced at Maidan, had blinkers as well. So I think the distance is going to be favorable. And I just like the fresh legs coming back in a race that appears loaded with speed. So he's going to be the key horse that I pivot off of in this particular race.
I have that, always have that fear with horses coming back from Dubai that, okay, do we see the Dubai bounce? Well, ran a pretty good race last out. Was it a delayed Dubai bounce? Is there such thing as a Dubai bounce? I like to believe that there is. I might just be kidding myself. You sound like you're more of a Thoroughgraph Sheets player. What do you believe? What do you think about the Dubai bounce? Is it real?
I think it was, personally, I think it was a thing of the 90s, my opinion. Now, you know, again, the fact when you say bounce, I mean, generally you look at horses that are coming off of what I was saying with Ben Duke, who run that big race, and then they come back in too short of a time. The other misnomer I think about Sheets, and I am actually more of a Ragazin reader, although regardless, I look at both. And I think they can run parallel. They're not exactly the same, but it's the same idea, right? You know, you look at the O2X, you look at horses that are essentially pairing and looking to run their best career race. Or, for example, you have a horse that runs his best career race and they come back within a week. I mean, that's kind of been like the bottom line with gamblers that play the sheet. So I think as far as the point you bring up regarding Ben Duke, the Dubai bounce, you know, maybe this horse isn't cut out for U.S. soil, but I think you look at that race, this horse got beat 50 cents on the dollar. My biggest fear with this horse, the fact that he broke slowly here. Now he adds the blinkers, but his workouts have been pretty constant, pretty steady since March. You know, he had that gap. He didn't work in February. I'm not saying go to the window on this horse, but I feel more confident in him versus a horse like Vespucci, in a sense of Vespucci is a horse that's clearly sitting on what I think could potentially be a bounce. I use Vespucci here, and, you know, ultimately I think the 10 horse is intriguing in pricing power just by way of the trip I think this horse will get. You know, drawn outside, Chad Brown, third off the layoff. You know, as far as angles, I think as handicappers, I think that has to be one of the most integral parts as far as horses' fitness. I mean, even as a former trainer, I would fall into positions with horses where I'm like, it's a second or third off the layoff. I didn't train them any differently. They just ran better second or third off the layoff. So I guess my only reservation on the 10 pricing power is he didn't cross the wire first. He got moved up via his qualification. I do think there is something to that when horses don't feel that energy of having won a race all by themselves.
Right.
I think there's something to it. But I love the first leg here because it's definitely a scramble type. You've got a 3-1 tepid morning line favorite in Bedduke, who I'm not thoroughly convinced is going to go favorite. I think the 6 goes favored probably 5-2, maybe 2-1.
Yeah, I was with you on Vespucci. I went too deep here. Vespucci, I have it in my notes here, basically said lost a brutal photo last out. Just Vespucci right. backers, a brutal photo. We had, I believe, Andrew Champagne on the show, and he picked that horse in that race. And so I was DMing him to congratulate him for the win whenever I saw the photo come back. It was that brutal of a photo. The other horse I used was the 9, Mystical Curlin. This is another kind of bet back horse for me from the exact same race that Vespucci comes from. This one broke for the gate before the race and just didn't really run his race in the slop after the gate fracas. And so, you know, very well bet in that outing. And I think this one could be undervalued today. So I'm going to use those two, Vespucci and also Mystical Curlin. I'm hoping it's kind of like what you mentioned with that other horse was that there's the concern of like, now you've had gate troubles. Hopefully those don't kind of persist, but I think you get an excellent price on Mystical Curlin.
I think the other, that was the horse that was my last throw off horse, in the 9, Mystical Curlin. I would hate to think it's habit forming, right? Keep in mind, this horse hadn't raced since November. Came back, was bet down that particular day. And that's just another angle for me as a handicapper, you know, horse player, beaten favorites with an excuse that offer value. And you get all of it here with Mystical Curlin. You know, if I were going to add a particular horse, it would be that one. But I think at the very least, you know, I'm going to play this race vertically as well. And I'm going to include the 9 because I think you're going to get every bit of that 8-1, if not more. I guess on the flip side, my biggest reservation, this horse had 7 tries at Aqueduct with 3 seconds, and the amount of runner-up finishes triple that of wins. So Mystical Curlin, that's why I ended up throwing off, because I felt this horse might be better relegated elsewhere, say, for example, in the verticals.
I like it. Good horse to key underneath in those exactas and trifectas. Real quick, got to get a word in from our good friends at Cut. Cut is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's U.S.-based and available in 40 states. Peer-to-peer social betting is a new and better way to bet. Bet directly against your friends or other users on sports, politics, pop culture, and other events with verifiable outcomes, plus tons of fun social features that give the feel of a betting social network. Cut offers lower VIG and fully customizable odds, and you can create your own bets. Plus, it's got all sorts of fun social features like group chats, betting leaderboards, head-to-head history, user profiles, fan groups, and more. So, download Cut today in the App Store or over at cut.com. That's KUTT, and use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. And, of course, we're brought to you by our good friends at Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest-growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play their pick'em game where you pick whether your favorite player will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big, and you can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Sign up today with promo code SGPN to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store, and don't forget to register with my promo code SGPN to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Must be 18 and present in the state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org. And after that, I've got to get a brief rehydration interlude in.
I got ice all over my body looking like a snowman. Big rocks in the grill dancing like a slow jam. My chain's so heavy, I'm walking like an old man. Try me, you.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Oh, that's just If you're not a fan of the hip hop, I understand, but it saves you from just the garish, disgusting, guttural, like water drinking noises that I bring to the table whenever I'm getting my rehydration in post ad read. Good time to segue here. Race 8, 9 furlongs, $200,000. The Gazelle Stakes, a grade 3. And I'm just going to say off the bat, I don't believe the favorite in this race can handle the stretch out because it seems to have failed to handle two straight stretch outs. And with front running style, it makes it appear that this one isn't going to relish the extra distance today. What was your thought on the Gazelle?
Well, Life Talk adds blinkers for trainer Todd Pletcher. You know, clearly could be a big day for him. As it is pretty much every Saturday, it seems, especially in prep season. You know, the fact that you've got a horse here in Life Talk that is 3-1 in the morning line, and you have to kind of look at that last race and say, was there enough of an excuse there? My feeling is that certain horses get down to Tampa and they struggle. They struggle over a sand-based racetrack. You know, I go back to the previous efforts. You know, this horse has won here locally, muddy track, but also won at Saratoga, I think is a positive sign. Out of the fact that Life Talk is a multiple winner, and not all of these are. In fact, you even have a maiden that has signed on into this grade 3, which I thought was interesting. Now, clearly keep in mind that this is before the scratches have been posted. So I didn't at least put up any alternate selections. Going back to the initial leg, I would have added your 9 if one of the horses that I used was indeed scratched. But I do like Life Talk in this situation. You know, and looking at Todd Pletcher, considering the fact that he does add the blinkers, he's 18% with that move. I also like the point, you know, that this horse returned off of time. You have that disappointing effort in the Suncoast. Now you have a situation where this horse has been training forwardly down at Palm Beach. And, you know, looking at paper, I don't see a lot of speed here. And I do think that the other horse that could add the speed would be Carmelina. Carmelina ended up being my top choice in this particular race by way of the idea that you're dealing with a horse that could dictate terms. However, going back to Life Talk, she's battle tested. She's a graded stakes winner. You go through, you know, the resumes, the forms on these other horses. No one's done that. So, you know, Life Talk probably deserves to be favored. Now, whether or not you'd want to take 2-1 or 9-5 is probably a not. But the other horse I thought was a little interesting is Barbertina. You know, she comes in from Turfway. You look at her efforts with the synthetic, and I know we're kind of going against the grain based on what we just talked about at Keeneland, but her efforts at Turfway were on par with what you saw at Churchill. She broke her maiden at Ellis, and that back in August was a very impressive run for her. Of all the legs that we're looking at here, and I'm probably going to shoot myself in the foot, I feel like I'm well covered here with three horses, and three horses that I'm likely going to play some trifectas with, and maybe tie up some exactas, because I don't think we've seen the best of Barbertina yet. This is a 3-year-old daughter of Catholic Boy, and kind of has that turfy feel to her, right? You thought she would have moved way up on the synthetic, but the races she ran in, you go back to that March 1st race, I think she had too much to do. And Max's Superfly, who won that particular race, went gate to wire. But Barbertina was passing everyone late, yet a next out winner in Everland. Everland came back to earn an 82 buyer in the Bourbon at Oaks. So, yeah, I feel as confident about three horses in this race on this ticket as any leg in the sequence. But I'm going to lay some win money on Carmelina, but it wouldn't surprise me if Life Talk won for fun.
Yeah, whatever I was saying earlier about the favorite, I was actually referring to the one, Where's My Ring?
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. That was my bad, because I'll tell you what, I thought that you either needed to be with the one Where's My Ring, or you needed to be with Life Talk, and I use this as a place to get cute and a spot where I could be with a single here.
Yes, I'm singing. I want to mingle.
You want to mingle?
Yeah.
And I'm mingling with the 5, Life Talk, at 3-1. I think that's the horse to beat.
I love it. I am a little surprised that Where's My Ring is dispatched as the second choice, 7-2. I mean, clearly she's not going to go off favored, do you think?
No, I don't think so. Not with Val Brinkerhoff, not with those connections in New York. Especially when you have Shug horses, you have Todd horses, you have Brad Cox horses. you know, Rudy Rod horses. That's where the New York money is going to flow to, you got to think.
Yeah, I totally respect her form. And I think when you poke at the sheets, you get a pretty good idea that, you know, she can definitely be competitive. But, you know, there's a couple of elements here for her that I don't like. The fact she's going to ship. I can't recall the last time Val Brinkerhoff, not that he's had great opportunities, he's a great guy. And clearly he's done a nice job with this horse. But, you know, I mentioned the Southern Equine Factor earlier. And I know we had a couple of upset specials through the years that, you know, Lauban comes to mind, you know, Maiden taking on winners and taking on greatest stakes horses. Ultimately, maidens and stakes, winners races, and stakes, graded stakes, it's just not a good combination. But the one thing about Where's My Ring, she does have speed, deceivingly, because you go back to the effort in that Maiden special weight. If she breaks away from the rail and gets brave and everyone decides they want to take back, and I say everyone, because I don't see much pace. That's why I think the 9 is the key in that particular race at a number. But I think you and I both agree. Life Talk for me, you know, she brings her B-plus game. I'm confident she's good enough to win.
I love the Carmelina pick because I love not fading Mid-Atlantic shippers whenever they ship into Aqueduct. It feels like they're right. Always dangerous. A good park shipper just warms the bones on a chilly Aqueduct day sometimes.
Very good.
Moving on, race 9, 7 furlongs, $150,000, the Bay Shore Stakes. And I think, you know, you get the old adage of you know, there being juiced tracks on big stakes days like this. Mm-hmm. I think even if you have a juiced track, that there's too much pace to sustain in this. And I'm going to be going off the pace in this race, but I'm only going too deep. Throwing the two closers, I think, are decent enough to win this one. And I have hopefully you can appreciate this. I have a New Year's resolution, which is I'm never singling closers on tickets ever again. It's like, I'm just going to throw they don't make any of their own luck. They don't make the pace. They're dependent on so many other factors that I just throw a run style of closers at it now as my solving the problem.
Yeah. I look, I'm not going to be mad at you for that. I think it comes down to the point that you have to have certain laws and rules that you abide by. I think I would probably even add to that, and more so in a turf race, and even more so if you're in a track where the turf rails are out trying to single a closer in a grass race. But 7/8 of a mile for me, it's always been a kind of a fascinating distance. You know, the one thing, if you kind of poll 10 different trainers and says, hey, which distance do you disdain the most? They're going to tell you 7 furlongs. Whereas at the same time, they'll tell you how much they love a flat mile or the mile one turn, right? But 7/8 for me as a handicapper, it's deceiving because I think ultimately many look to that as a race where you would generally have horses that roll from off the pace. The separator here, I think when you look on paper, is the fact you have to determine which horse is the quickest of the quick. And when I read DRF Formulator, the time form pace ratings, I think, are more of a tell-all than anything else. And I think when you get a race like this, if you get one blast-off particular speed type, the one that kind of stands out here as far as numbers are concerned is a proprietary trade. The Chad Brown, 1 by 4 3/4. Visually, this horse galloped back on March 7th. Was there much behind him? I don't know. I mean, it was a 5-horse field. You had one horse that came back and finished an off-the-board fourth. And I'm not convinced that the runner-up is going to turn out to be any champion of that matter, right? So for me, it really came down to, all right, let me go back to the class department. And when you look at Maximus Meridius and you look very closely at the Gotham Mile, I just don't think this horse wanted any part of the distance. And I think we'll appreciate getting back to the 7/8, 6.5. You look at those shorter races at Parks, not to mention Maximus Meridius had a race over the track. I'm probably telling you everything and everything that everybody knows already, but I would be leery of not taking any pace horses in here. I narrowed this down to just 2 horses. And I think the wild card is Classic Joke. And you say, well, Classic Joke has won 2 in a row, but they both have been going essentially gate to wire. What I like is a classic joke, won two races, different services. Today is the second start back. Not to mention this one came back with that bullet best of 13, a 59-3 at Tampa. And Practical Joke for me has been a fun sire to watch. He's had some good horses, great horses. Unfortunately, a Practical Move left us far too soon. But I think this is a horse that can rate. I don't believe that they're going to look at this and say, hey, we've got to be on the lead. I'm hopeful that he can because I think he's up to the task. But ultimately, when you look at Maximus Meridius, class prevails. And a horse that's battle-tested. And his effort in the Gotham was much better than look in a deep race. Another horse that could potentially kind of frank the form of those horses we're going to see a bit later in the Wood Memorial. But I thought that was a bang-up race for him. He fought hard. He wasn't that far away from Just a Touch, who many like, including myself. Deterministic is likely to go favored in the Wood Memorial. So if someone were to single the four here, it wouldn't surprise me. And I clearly could have. I just felt that based on numbers, based on workouts, based on timing, the Classic Move is a horse that you can maybe put a few dollars on at bang for your buck because you're going to get 8-1.
I'm throwing bombs here. I'm using the 5 Augustine Red at 15-1.
Okay.
Was second the only other time trying the distance, but I love where this one fits in the race shape. If he's good enough and he's got the pace set up in front of him to run down. And then the 8 eliminated, 8-1. This is, I believe, St. Elias and Rapoli. Spendthrift and Rapoli. Is the other one that I think can come from off the pace and is getting a cut back in distance after trying the Gotham in the slop. Really like this one facing winners for the second time after being thrown straight into a Derby prep. Hopefully got a little bit of an education in that last race and we see a better effort out here, but it hopefully provides some effort, some value at 8-1. And one of my two longer priced closers can try to, get on the board or get up for the win and keep me alive here.
The one horse that I wanted to wish best of luck to is Ridgewood Runner, the 10 for Carlos Martin. And, just a side story. It's amazing this horse already raced 8 times, but I mentioned the Pinhooking, and it's not necessarily a humble brag, but it kind of is because it's fun. But I purchased this horse at Phase of October in 2022 for $5,500, and he was a Pinhook at OBS last year for $110,000. So what I love most about the story is the fact that not only did I make money on behalf of clients, but the current connections are ahead of the game. And now they have a horse that's making his 9th start and competing in $150,000 stake, which I think is fascinating. I will say this about Ridgewood Runner, different horse since he added Lasix and gets blinkers. Unfortunately, today he will not have the Lasix, but he's a winner at the distance. And I think as handicappers, we definitely have to give a little extra look to those horses who have won at the distance. But maybe I'll put like a side $2 win wager just to make myself feel better if he shocks him at a number. He's 15-1 in the morning line.
Yeah, just to say you had it, of course. That's always sure. Gonna have that one in your pocket.
There you go.
Here we go. We are on to the big race, race 10, 9 furlongs, $750,000, the Wood Memorial. And with the heavy favoritism for Deterministic following a very strong Gotham performance, I think it puts you in a position where you either have to single or toss Deterministic. I'm going to opt to toss Deterministic, who I hit on the Gotham and, go with horses in this race I think could run a stocking or an off-pace trip to get home. I ended up going 3 deep. What did you think of the Wood Memorial?
This could very well be the year. I mean, we've seen a long dry spell, right? And incidentally, Todd Pletcher, when you go through the form, this would be an opportunity for him to kind of put himself in the record books. And I'm just going through the past performances with Protective. He and that one, the Tuscan Sky, who appear to have just a boatload of talent. He would tie, Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons for the all-time winningest trainer of this race, which I think is fascinating. The race was inaugurated back in 1925. What's also interesting about this race is the fact that it really hasn't been relevant in quite some time. Now, granted, you had the likes of Tacitus, who was on, I think, a lot of Derby watches back in 2019, horse in Vino Rosso for Pletcher, who had won the year prior for Rapoli. But it wasn't until the early 2000s where we had, what, three of the 4 years, FUPEG, Monarcos, and it was Funnyside. But since then, it's just been such a long drought. But I do believe in looking at this field that there is a possibility. I think all eyes are going to be on Keeneland, rightfully so, Sierra Leone, in addition to Dornock, a horse that I still believe pound for pound may have the most talent. Now, whether or not it comes out into fruition at the right time remains to be seen. And then looking at the rags and numbers that Fierceness posted, not to mention Forever Young. And I understand that Forever Young, I think, paired 1.25s on Thoroughgraph. I mean, and Fierceness posted a negative minus number. You've got some serious numbers going in. So clearly, whoever comes out of this race can have to step up in a big way. The one that probably stands out the most is Deterministic. I was impressed with his effort. And, you know, you're going to get a little bit of a barometer as the horse we mentioned earlier with Maximus Meridius. I thought the flow of the Gotham was pretty ideal for him. But what I like about Deterministic is that he's actually got more speed than meets the eye. You know, his workouts have been consistent. It's his second start back today. Christophe Clement, mainly known as a turf trainer. You know, I'm still not subscribed entirely that he is that dirt trainer. You know, I was a big fan of Giopponte. In fact, it was the year when Zenyatta won a Breeders' Cup out west. I was in position for a pretty significant score. And, you know, that was on synthetic. So, Christophe, I think this is a moment for him, right? This is like a watershed in the sense that, hey, I can train a Derby winner. And I think Deterministic of this field is probably the most likely one. But that being said, I didn't feel confident enough to shore up the ticket. I do believe that he's going to make his own trip here. You know, he's by Liam's Map. Liam's Map's had a pretty good run here these last few months. But I ended up using three horses. And I did think the Tuscan Sky visually, the effort that he won in that entry-level allowance back on February 17th at the fairgrounds. I just love the fact that Pletcher, and I realized that there was only a three-horse field, but Nash did manage to come back and win the Hot Springs in a subsequent start and did it impressively enough. Pletcher focused on this particular race. You know, clearly he's got other horses, not to mention the fact that Fierceness, I think, is back on. And Spendthrift with Tuscan Sky, I think they pretty much cherry-picked a spot here for a horse that should be forwardly placed. So for me, Tuscan Sky, I think, is the upset special. But ultimately, my friend, resilience for trainer, Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott is where I landed with my top selection. And I was a bit long-winded here. He did take some time to break his maiden. I don't think he loved the track last out. I think if you go back and watch the trip, I think Johnny V would have liked to have had that ride back. Adding blinkers has not necessarily been a forte for your Hall of Fame trainer, you know, in these types of situations. I think right around, what, 10%. However, I think resilience is going to show more poise. He's by Into Mischief, and the workout's been outstanding at Payson Park. And I think the other point, this horse went 1.08 last time, gives him kind of an upper hand. So I narrowed it down. Deterministic's going to have to prove that he wants the added real estate. Visually, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. And then Tuscan Sky is just an unbeaten son of Vino Rosso that is built to get better with age. So I would love to get that price and resilience of 6-1. If I do, I'm probably going to sprinkle some win money here. And as you know, the Risen Star came back. Be a pretty live race with Catching Freedom, who was a next out winner. That was the only winner next out. But Sierra Leone is one that many have put to the top of their Derby list. So 1.49 is where I ended up here in the Wood Memorial.
We're pretty much in lockstep here with resilience. I also really love more inwardly drawn speed going two turns at Aqueduct, and resilience is the horse I think that should be forwardly placed and stalking at the rail. I mean, you got beat out by a freakish performance by Sierra Leone last out. You know, I don't really have any, there's not much fault I can find in that. Plus, you know, like the Bill Mott's adding the blinkers here, 21% winning angle for him. And I think it's just a good choice in Johnny V in the irons. And I was with you on Tuscan Sky. The other one that I'll mention that I used, Uncle Heavy D. Still no respect for Uncle Heavy D after he, after winning the last race. No respect for the park shipper, but I really like Uncle Heavy D here as maybe, you know, a horse has just been waiting for a dry, fast track after two straight efforts. Because the first, you know, dry track effort that this horse put out as a maiden was a really good figure. And then runs into trouble and runs into two straight wet tracks. I think on a fast dry track, I can't say at 8-1 that this horse can't surprise.
No, I'm not going to disagree. I think the point that you look at, you know, when you consider the trip and whatnot, you know, he certainly earned it. And I think the other idea for me, it's much like when you look at a college football or a basketball team, rather, you know, we talk about the March Madness, now we're into April. Of course, we're down to the Final Four. But when horses win close races, I look at it like a basketball team that are able to hit the free throws at crunch time. They have the ability to win the close games, meaning that no matter how tired they are, they're resilient. And I think the one thing that you can see with Uncle Heavy, even going back to his debut, he's pretty resilient. And when he has the opportunity to put a field away like he did in the Wait For It at Parks, he did so. He won by 1.25. My biggest drawback for him might actually be the draw. And, you know, based on, you know, how this race sets up, he's certainly going to have to kind of stack himself into a trip, but he just gets the pace. There's plenty of pace. And, you know, the other X factor here is Merritt, who exits that Conquest Warrior race on March 1st. And, you know, for me, I think Conquest Warrior has been a bit more of a phony. People wanted to believe because they like Shook, they like the story. But clearly you saw what he did. He came back in the Florida Derby, you know, and kind of just hung around for a minor award. I mean, nobody was going to beat Fierce since that day. But I would be a little reluctant to go in the direction of Merritt just for that sake. But, I'm confident El Grande O might be the other horse that can be talked about here. He makes his own race. Boy, he's had a busy year. I mean, this will be his fourth start. I say that. I mean, we're in the year 2024. But, you know, he finished nose behind Uncle Heavy. He got beat by Deterministic. What's going to be any different here? How does he turn the tables? I don't think he does. I think with resilience, I think if you look really closely at that Risen Star, you know, he was the only horse out there chasing Track Phantom that still stuck around in the end. And the rest of them, you know, finished way back in Cardinale and B Dancer. So I feel good. And I think that resilience could be one that you might even be able to take a stand. If you're going to play some late doubles, he might be a horse that you can maybe single and get yourself some good value.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that angle of playing because I subscribe to the school of thought that crazy things always happen in the last leg of Aqueduct Pick Five. So, you know, if you can get that sort of like 6-1 price, you know, in the first leg, spread out to some bigger prices in the next leg, that could be a pretty nice little sweetener for a pick or a daily double. All right, we are on to the payout leg, the leg where we hope to make the sort of generational wealth where we can speak to the help like this.
Hey, on, don't rub on that. You block that. You understand? That's alpaca. That's $25,000 alpaca. You block that shit. Right. You don't rub on. Put the club soda on there.
We're talking the put the club soda on my alpaca money.
Love it.
Six furlongs, $70,000, New York bred, maiden special weight, because what is a big horizontal sequence in New York if it doesn't end with a New York bred maiden special weight race? I've done a good job of staying thin all through this ticket. In this case, I'm going to stand with single horse. I think I could actually do the job with, and I ended up six deep. I'm just going to rip through a few of these real quick. I did include the chalk Peony. It's shown that it can actually pass other horses, which is important in these maiden races. Grandia, Speed and Fade, the three Grandia, Speed and Fade last out. You know, of the horses that have actual speed figures in their past performance, he's one of the fastest ones on paper here. The four, Mama's Got a Gun. It's a gun runner, baby. First timer for Linda Rice. I'm not a huge fan of Bullet Works before first time starts, but I think this one could be sharp on debut. The seven Savannah Dancer at 5-1. And I'll tell you what, if I'm still alive in this ticket to this point, I will name my next child Savannah. One of my favorite angles here, had trouble in the first start, packed it in, lost by 24 lengths. To me, that signals that it could be a horse who just missed the break last out and could flash early speed today. Could just surprise you out on the front. And who knows, when a horse gets out on the front and gets brave, crazy things happen. The nine Better Be Smart, ran a close-up stalking trip, but just couldn't quite pass last out. And then the 10, Spirit of Esther at 12-1. Had a bad break last out and then rushed up close to the pace. I think that might have taken the starch out of it a little bit. So we'll see what this one is capable of if she can make a clean break.
Well, what's interesting about this race, you get three horses that exit the common event. Ariana Rive, Find Your Joy, and the horse you mentioned in Savannah Joy. I as much as I would like to, you know, subscribe, you know, to a horse that, or Savannah Dancer rather, horse that may offer the biggest of value. My biggest concern about Savannah Dancer is the fact this horse took no money in that debut. It was a seven horse field. I did not end up using Ariana Rye for the sake of, well, there is really no excuse. This is the horse that I fear the most. It came down to trying to give myself a little more value. Peony, hopefully going to help this ticket smell sweet in the end. I guess named in honor of a herbaceous shrubby plant out of the Mare Flower Mart. So that's where that name comes from. I have a little concern about the one, just based on the fact that, you know, this horse has kind of loomed and hung and then repelled and got beat on the square to City Blocks on debut. You know, when you look back at City Blocks, you know, a horse that came back versus winners didn't run well, but there was a horse that finished behind that Dan's Stress Reliever. So I think that's a positive sign. But I think Peony, Dylan Davis needs to just be very patient here, because I think both the two and the three and Granadilla, they have enough speed if the one were just to kind of just essentially sit the trip. Why did they end up going in the direction of Mama's Got a Gun? Well, Linda Rice, although she's 11% with first-time starters in this particular race, the mother draft, I thought there was some usefulness to her eventually in her career. Now, granted, the brunt of her work was on turf. When you look at the lone sibling, nearly broke its maiden career start, number two. The fact that you have a horse that is younger, right? You've got a three-year-old that debuts as a newly turned three-year-old, I think is a positive. That last work, I think, points her out over the Belmont training track, a bullet vest of four. Jose Lascano, you know the drill. He wins for this barn, 24%. And I thought this is the type of race where a first-time starter could, you know, step up and win. But better be smart. If you look closely at her effort last out and you watch the replay, I don't think she handled the track. You know, she had two other horses that exited that race. If you look at the winner of that particular event in Matoli's Girl, she was coming off a dismal debut, but was bet down as your 2-1 favorite. Better be smart, I think, is the best value in the nightcap here, just based on the draw. I think there's going to be some pace to set this one up. You get Joel Rosario on the re-ride. There's a lot to like here. Charlie Baker, only 7% on the year, so people may sleep on that one. So I don't have any regrets at this stage leaving out the two, but I went 1-4-9. And, you know, the other horse that I thought could offer some good value coming out of the Better Be Smart race was a 10 Spirit of Fisher, because over the years, Carlos Martin, his horses tend to run themselves into shape. And, you know, you get a horse that's now drawn even further out and should set a pretty good trip in the 10. But I think we got bases covered. I like the investment level that I came in with here at $108 on a 50-cent play.
There we go. And that's the end of the sequence. So I'm going to wrap up these tickets for you. For me, I kept it thin at the beginning here. First leg, I was 6-9, singled the 5 in the second leg, 5-8 in the third leg, 1-9-13 in the wood, and then 1-3-4-7-9-10. I'm a $36 ticket at the 50-cent base. Nick's ticket kicked it off with the 2-6-7-10, second leg 4-5-9, third leg 2-4, and then we went 1-4-9, 1-4-9 to close it out. As you mentioned, 108 at the 50-cent base, which I think is a good level of investment for what this could possibly pay, especially if you go against, you know, deterministic in the wood. If you get around a couple of these other favorites here, it has a lot of just kind of bonkers payout potential.
I would tend to agree. And I think, as we've all come to find out, when you're, say, for example, when you're betting the sixes, the fives, the fours, even sometimes in a three, if you begin with a horse at you know, double digit payout, horse pays $20, and you had an overwhelming favorite in that first leg that gets beat, that's one side of it. But looking at this first leg of this sequence, you know, it's unlikely there's going to be a horse that pays less than $9 in that deep first leg. So I will say this about the pick five at Aqueduct tomorrow. It's sneaky good. It's sneaky good just based on the fact that you're getting depth. You're getting some quality horses. And, you know, I think that there are going to be several eyes that are kind of fixated on Keeneland, for example, you know, with Bluegrass Day and, you know, the fact that you have those. You know, the championship meet pretty much subsided out at Gulfstream. And now things kind of transition a bit. But this is an opportunity for Aqueduct to kind of stake their claim and say, hey, you know, we're kind of the forgotten one on the Derby trail. But, you know, the one thing you have to remember is that there's 170 qualifying points for the Bull Memorial. It's a big deal. And I do think that the contention runs deep. But I also believe that Deterministic is going to get heavily bet in this case just based on his perfect record. And it's second start off the bench for Christophe Clement. Although he's just 13%, he's 23% when horses win their most recent start.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for us here at the Notorious OTB. This has been absolutely fantastic. I would like to welcome you to Friends of the Show status. You get a velour tracksuit as your gift as friend of the show. And it doesn't say anything about the show. It just says sassy across the back of the pants.
I love it.
Yeah, man. Is there anything you want to shout out before we get out of here?
I want to shout out to you, my friend. Again, you're a fun follow on X. You know, the wolf, of course, the AI images they cannot be topped. You cannot be stopped. And I'm humbled to have come on the program today. You know, I probably don't do enough of these, but when I get asked by people, I think about the person I'm working with. And it's been a lot of fun, and I hope that we can do this in a near future. And, you know, if you're tuned in at FanDuel TV, feel free to give me a follow and I'll give you a shout out on the air. But it's been a pleasure, my friend, and best of luck to each and everyone out there over this weekend. Get the month of April kicked off right. Derby 150 just around the corner at Churchill.
There we go. And I just want to say before we get out of here, this man is he's skilled at wearing a hat. He's got a smooth looking brim, I will say. As someone who's just tried to get into the brim, to branch out in the brim game, I'm impressed. I'm very impressed. All right, that's going to do it for us.
I mean, you're the swag guy. I mean, you got swag everywhere. I just hope to keep up with you, my man. But I love the hip-hop vibe. I love the hip-hop vibe. Even though I'm a West Coast guy, I was Biggie through and through.
There we go. See, the thing about this, my swag is that my wife forbids me to wear these things outside of the home. You know, I need to try to get it into hats because that way she'd be like, I feel like she'll actually let me like walk out of the front door wearing a nice hat as opposed to, this some swaggy chains.
Well, you're looking sharp, my man. And as I said, I hope that, you gain more followers as you move forward. And, you know, I think in the world of horse racing, I mean, we are ambassadors, for sport, and it's important to, you know, share the love, you know, provide the positivity, but at the same time, keeping it real. And, you know, as I said, with all the darkness that is in the world, it's people like you and, of course, the comrades that share the love and spread the love. And I'm just blessed to be a part of it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's going to do it for us this week. We will see you next week with more Notorious OTB. We will catch you then.